Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good evening and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. We have a special guest on the program today. We're going to be talking about Constitution Day. And of course, September the 16th is Constitution Day. This year, we're celebrating it on the 17th of September. You're listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance. We're also in the program going to have later State Senator Larry Obaugh will be with us. We'll be talking about the Founding of American Documents curriculum, in which Ohio students from the 8th through the 12th grade are learning the Constitution finally in the classroom and about our American government, this republic, And of course, this week we will be celebrating that wonderful document that was constructed nearly 230 years ago, and that is the U.S. Constitution, which in many ways has been under assault in recent years in Washington and by other challenges. Well, we're going to have with us the Executive Director of the Ashbrook Center from Ashland University, and that is the Political Science Department at Ashland University, a fine institution, the Ashbrook Center. We're going to give you more information about that. Of course, their website is ashbrook.org. And with me on the program is Roger Beckett. Roger, welcome to the program.
Chris, it's great to be with you.
Well, thanks for taking time out and joining us today. And of course, this week is Constitution Day, and you've actually made some national headlines with an article that you wrote urging the candidates to take the day off, the Constitution Day, to actually read and study the Constitution. Explain to us what you're thinking about there.
Well, it's been pretty striking in this election season to see candidates just so freely talking about ways that the Constitution ought to be amended to change the things that they want to change. And our Constitution is in many ways the cornerstone of the stability of our republic. And we've only changed the thing 27 times, and a lot of those amendments came out of the original Bill of Rights. So we've changed this thing very rarely in American history. And the candidates just need to make sure that when they're thinking about what they want to do, if they're going to make permanent changes like that, they should be pretty deliberative about it.
You know, I saw a little funny clip from the old television program, Andy Griffith, where Barney is telling Andy he knows how to recite the preamble to the Constitution. And of course, he's needing a lot of help just to get started. It's very hilarious. But we really do want our young people to learn the Constitution, not just the preamble, but to actually read it. And, of course, the Ashbrook Center is all about the founding documents. It's about our American government, our American way of life. And, in fact, tell us a little bit about the Ashbrook Center at Ashland University.
Well, Ashbrook is an independent center at Ashland University, and we work with students and teachers all across the country, helping them develop a better and deeper understanding of what America is and why she's so significant in the long history of the world. And we work with these students and teachers to just help create new generations of informed patriots.
Well, of course, the Ashbrook Center was founded after the congressman, John Ashbrook, who was from that area. That was his district. And, of course, a staunch conservative, a friend of Ronald Reagan. In fact, at your Ashbrook dinner this year, you had Ed Rollins, who actually worked with Ronald Reagan, both his campaign committee and also in the presidential staff. And he recounts the story when one of the first speakers, if not the first speaker for the Ashbrook dinner, which has been a wonderful series over the years. I've been able to attend at least eight of them over the last decade. You've had some great speakers that have come in, but one of your first speakers, if not the first speaker, was President Ronald Reagan. Tell us about that.
He was. He was the person that opened up the Ashbrook Center, and And we've been very blessed over the years to have, after him, it was Vice President Bush and then members of his cabinet. And we've had Benjamin Netanyahu and Margaret Thatcher and just many world leaders and national leaders who have been here to support our efforts to help better educate students about what America represents in the world. And it was wonderful with Ed Rollins. He spoke this year, but 30 years ago was on the airplane on Air Force One coming out with President Reagan and was working in the White House and was here for the first dinner and was honored to be out here for the 30th.
Where did Air Force One land that year? Was it at the air in Mansfield at the Air Force the National Air Guard base? Where did it actually land?
Yeah, exactly. They landed over in Mansfield. He took a helicopter over here and landed in the high school parking lot. It was a big event in a small town, and people still talk about it today who were around for it.
And that's really incredible. It really is, because here Air Force One is landing in this little town in in Ashland, Ohio, and the press corps is like, what's going on here? And a sitting president coming and being the first speaker at the Ashbrook dinner. I just thought that was awesome. And Ed Rollins, it was great to reminisce about the Reagan days and get some insight. And so that was wonderful. I really enjoy attending the Ashbrook events, and you do have events that are open to the public. As you have a number of speakers that come through, you actually have some activities coming up in association with Constitution Day. Tell us about that.
We do. This Friday, we are having our annual Constitution Day talk and having Professor Steve Knott, who not only teaches for us here at Ashbrook with our programs for teachers, but he teaches at the U.S. Naval War College, and he'll be talking about the founder's presidency versus the progressive presidency this Friday here in Ashland. And anyone's welcome to attend.
And you have a series of luncheons through the year that are also open to the public. Those normally are on Fridays, is that right?
They take place on different days of the week. We have one next Wednesday with the founder of Ariel Corporation down in Mount Vernon, and that company is celebrating their 50th anniversary. Jim Buchwald is his name, and he'll be talking about the creation. The title is Made in America: The Creation of One of the Best Capital Goods Companies in the World. So, folks interested in the business world are welcome to that, and others may be interested next month in October. October 20th, we'll be having syndicated columnist Cal Thomas here to speak for an evening dinner. So information is on our website, and we'd love for people to join us.
And again, the website is... Let me see if
Ashbrook.org. Ashbrook.org.
Wonderful. And of course, just a great institution. You know, trying to explain people to say, oh, I've never heard of the Ashbrook Center. I said, well, have you heard of Hillsdale College? Well, they say, well, of course. Well, I said, this is kind of the Hillsdale College of Ohio, but I'll go one better than that. A lot of the staff that actually teaches at the Hillsdale College were graduates of the Ashbrook Center.
A number of our undergrads. In fact, I think the folks teaching the Constitution at Hillsdale, there are more of them who are undergrads here at Ashland than any other institution. And there are a small number of really good schools around the country, and that the folks can more safely send their students to and their other kids to, and this is one of them.
Well, of course, Dr. Peter Schramm. We can't talk about the Ashbrook Center without talking about Dr. Peter Schramm, who passed away this last year, who served in the Reagan administration, and a wonderful man, and had a vision for this school to really carry the mission through the years, and had a personal input with each student that came in. And I remember when I brought my daughter September for the interview with Dr. Schramm, and she loved it from the moment she saw the Ashbrook program. Of course, she graduated. She's now working at the Ohio State House. And that's another thing. I mean, folks, the Ashbrook graduates, what we call the Ashbrook Scholars, they're really the mover and shakers of our world. They're doing tremendous work, around not just the country, but really around the world. And there's been a lot of notables throughout the years that have been graduates of the college, have gone on and done great things. And they're working with senators, they're working with congressmen, they're working in the White House, throughout the year, the White Houses. And so these are, they're working at think tanks, in Washington, D.C. They're, in fact, what I like is that as an undergraduate program, you actually require for the seniors to write a thesis. And it's only one of a handful of undergrad programs in the country that requires that. But yet, in fact, my daughter, September, she was working on this for over a year. Every time she'd come home for a weekend, she was in the books. And I said, what are you working on? My thesis, So it was really a very serious intent. And of course, she wrote a wonderful piece, but it wasn't just her. All of the graduating seniors that presented their theses that year and every year, they're really a read in themselves. Explain to us that part of the program.
Well, it's a critical part of it. One of the things that distinguishes what we do here at Ashbrook is to give these students a deep understanding of the principles upon which America was founded, and what we ask them to do is by the time they graduate have done a very rigorous paper that's usually around 50 pages long that they start on usually the beginning of their junior year at the latest and complete that, and what it does is it gives them the kind of experience they need when they go out in the world, and whether they're in politics or business, to be able to have completed that type of rigorous project, or if they go on to graduate school, it gives them a leg up, and it's one of the great features, and we know the students struggle with it, but just like September, they do very well with it in the end. And it's a great experience. It's a capstone to their education here.
We're talking with Roger Beckett, the executive director of the Ashbrook Center. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back on the other side. We're going to talk about Constitution Day and the candidates running for office and their view of the U.S. Constitution. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
In January of 1776, Pastor Peter Muhlenberg preached a sermon, "For Everything There Is a Season," from the book of Ecclesiastes. When he read the eighth verse, "A time of war and a time of peace," he took off his clerical robe to reveal his colonial uniform. He walked to the back of the church and recruited 162 men from his congregation to form the 8th Virginia Regiment to fight in the Revolutionary War. America was in a crisis and was in need of men and women of faith to stand up with courage to face the threat to liberty. Today, America is facing new threats to our liberty, and the citizens' army needed is one in which will get involved, register, and vote. The Ohio Christian Alliance has launched a statewide Citizenship Sunday voter registration drive in churches across the state of Ohio. To help conduct a voter registration effort at your church and volunteer, contact the offices of the Ohio Christian Alliance at 330-887-1922 or log on to ohioca.org.
Great. And we're back with Roger Beckett, Executive Director of the Ashbrook Center. We're talking about Constitution Day, which is this Friday, but is being celebrated on Saturday. Roger, explain that to us. Is it a federal thing, that the reason why they're doing it that way?
Yeah, the actual anniversary of the signing of the Constitution is on September 17th, but the U.S. Department of Education always encourages schools to celebrate the Constitution in some way, and so just because it happens to land on a Saturday, so they're going to be doing that in schools on Friday, but any day is a good day to read the Constitution in America.
Absolutely. And of course, this piece that you wrote about the candidates in reading the Constitution. I remember a former state representative and state senator, Tim Grindel, who's currently serving as a justice in Geauga County. He had a tradition. Every beginning session, he would read the U.S. Constitution and the Ohio Constitution. Now, of course, that's a novel idea. We would think that every legislator and office holder would do the same. It's certainly not required, but something in which he would do as a practice. First of all, to familiarize himself again with the Ohio Constitution, since he was going to be grappling with that, with various pieces of legislation that would be offered or amendments that would be considered during the year in the course of his office duties as a state legislator. In fact, what he did, he realized as he began to talk to some of his colleagues, some of them had never read the Ohio Constitution. So what he did is, out of his own pocket, he began to print the Ohio Constitution and gave it to each one of his colleagues, both Democrat and Republican, and encouraged them to read it. Now, I actually challenged one of the Senate members to do the same, and they're actually considering that, to do that at the beginning of every session. But, you know, we talk about that with office holders, but even more so in the schools in recent decades, there hasn't been the emphasis of teaching the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, the Northwest Ordinance. These things have been kind of left off the table, or been diminished, I should say, in their emphasis within the classroom under the auspices of what we call social studies. So, you know, the old political class that we would take back in the day, where we would have, depending upon the teacher's enthusiasm for the subject, we would have some kind of exposure to the Constitution in our form of government. That diminished over the years, and people did notice that. So in Ohio, we remedied that with a piece of legislation called the Founding of American Documents Curriculum Bill. And actually, we were able to get that passed, but it took me 10 years, Roger, to get that through the Ohio legislature. Persistence pays off. And in the end, Dr. Schramm was there for the signing. A number of folks from Columbus and, of course, Governor Kasich said, "Long, where are you? Get over here, dot the I on Kasich." So he knew that we had put in a lot of heavy lifting to get that thing through. But a really fine piece of legislation that requires the teaching of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, the Ohio Constitution, the Northwest Ordinance, in the Ohio classroom from the 8th through the 12th grade. Of course, it progresses in the scholastic intensity as you go on through the grades, and in the end of course exam as well. Now, we're going to get a report later in the program from State Senator Larry Oboff, who's been monitoring that. He was the original sponsor, along with State Representative John Adams. You've got to love that, right? The namesake of one of the founders was actually one of the co-sponsors of the bill. But Ashbrook, of course, played a role in that, in coming in and testifying in support of it. Talk to us about what's happening right now across the country in regard to the knowledge of the Constitution, our way of American government.
Well, if you look at history and civic education over the last couple generations, it's truly been on the decline. I think with the heavy emphasis on the STEM subjects for jobs, and you know, with science, technology, engineering, math, and with a greater emphasis on literacy, one of the effects that we've seen is that history and civics are being pushed out of the curriculum. And just broadly speaking, if you look at it nationally, you really see those topics being taught far less than they were 30 or 40 years ago. And that's a real problem. I mean, this is America is the greatest experiment in self-government that the world has ever seen. And for that experiment to work, its citizens have to know something about how our government works, and more importantly, why it works that way. And we were just doing that less and less, and honestly, it's not surprising that we end up seeing elections like this after two or three generations of really scaling back our history and civic education.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. I'm sure that as you saw one by one, some of the candidates on the Republican side of the aisle just fall by the wayside. Those who really showcase the Constitution, the balance of powers, they're articulated in their mission and in their, you know, their emphasis of their political campaigns. And we saw a businessman emerge who seemed to not have much exposure to none to political office prior to not having you know, certainly he wouldn't consider himself to be astute in the Constitution itself. But this is a candidate that's been interesting, to say the least, and unique. And then we talk about Donald Trump, because in some ways he does support some of the things that we would almost call Reaganistic, in the way that Ronald Reagan ran his campaign. Now, Ronald Reagan, though, was very well defined in his policies. Donald Trump has been, I mean, this thing was just, it's inside of 24 months from the time of the announcement to where we're at today. You know, and so I know there was a lot of people like, no, you know, it's like that this was the nominee. But it's gotten better, I think, of looking at the people he surrounded himself with. And we know that that's critical because at times, even with the Reagan administration, there were some people that were surrounding him that weren't such a great influence, that of, you know, that influence for bad or good. And we look at some of the Supreme Court nominees that Mr. Reagan, I think if he had an opportunity, would have taken some of them back. And some of them, you know, Justice Kennedy was one of them. You know, it wasn't Kennedy was appointed by him, or was it George H. Bush? I think. Roger.
And I think if you look at Reagan, the consistency in his thought in his 19, I think it was it 64 when he did his Time for Choosing speech. And you look at the way that he talked about his political principles well before the time that he became president, and how consistent those principles were through his presidency. You know, certainly was someone who we did understand, you know, where he stood on issues and had a long track record there. But you know, I always think back to the Constitution on these things, though, because you have a document that has created the most stable Republican, small r Republican government that the world has ever seen. And it created a large republic before America was founded. There were never large republics. There were small ones. But the idea of dividing powers and setting up a federal government that allowed for this large republic to grow in America is just a wonderful gift that has been passed down to us. So regardless of who the president is, and no matter what, you know, individuals think about particular candidates, there's a stability to American politics that prevents us from becoming a third world country. So one of the many reasons for us to be thankful about the Constitution on Constitution Day.
Well, that's exactly right. And one of the programs that you run now is for you know, American history teachers to actually do a master's program. History teachers do a master's program. Talk to us about that.
Well, sure. You know, one of the things that we've learned over time is that universities have been letting teachers down and sending them into the classroom without an adequate understanding of American history. And teachers are truly hungry to learn more about the country so they can help their students become good citizens and better citizens. And so we offer a wide variety of programs. The most intense is a master's program, but we're running one-day programs in about 13 states around the country, weekend programs at historic sites. And the simple idea is to put original documents in front of teachers and let them learn the real story of the country from the people who were involved in it at the time. So reading those speeches and letters and helping those teachers take those back into their classrooms and replace their textbooks with these much more interesting and much more true documents and speeches to just help them better tell the story of America.
Well, that's right. I mean, we can pass legislation like the Founding of American Documents curriculum, but if you don't have the teachers that have the passion and the knowledge of the Constitution to be able to relate that to students, it's going to get lost in translation. So I think it's a wonderful coupling. At the same time that we pass this legislation that's required in the districts, the Ashbrook Center is educating our teachers to go back in the classroom. It's not just for Ohio, of course, but it's all across the country. You have those who are coming in for the summer intensive. Well, Roger, we're going to have right. Have you back on the program because there's so much more to talk about with the Ashbrook program. And folks, again, we want you to visit their website, ashbrook.org. It really is a treasure in our backyard right in Ashland, Ohio. And they have programs that are available to the public. Some of the luncheons, the dinners, some of the speakers. You want to get down there to the Ashbrook Center, visit what's going on down there. And, you know, I think you're going to be very impressed, and you're going to be the first of many visits for you. Roger, thanks so much for coming on the program today.
Chris, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you.
And happy Constitution Day.
Same to you.
Thank you, sir. God bless you. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be on the other side with State Senator Larry Oboff, and we'll be continuing of what we're doing with Constitution Day and, of course, in the Ohio classroom, what progress we're making on teaching the U.S. Constitution. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
WHKW Cleveland, bringing the word to Northern Ohio. AM 1220, The Word, a service of Salem Media Group.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. We're talking about Constitution Day, and that is this week, and we are in observance of Constitution Day. And, you know, we'd really like to encourage you to read the Constitution, Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, and actually make it a family affair. Maybe sit the folks around the table and begin to read and even take some questions and do some Q&A. With us on the phone is State Senator Larry Oboff, who is a constitutional attorney and has taken some cases, some of which have gone all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. But he is serving us currently in the Ohio Senate, and he is from the Medina County area. Senator, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be on today.
Well, thank you for joining us. We just wrapped up with Roger Beckett, a friend of yours and mine, who is the executive director of the Ashbrook Center. I know an institution that's near and dear to your heart. In fact, one of the publications, if we visit your office in Columbus, that you avail to those who visit, tell us about that. It's called the 50 Important Documents.
That's right. We've got there's a book by Ashbrook that's called The 50 Core American Documents, and it's intended as reading for students, teachers, and just any citizen who wants to learn more about our government and our history. And the Ashbrook Center puts that out, and you can get it there, but I also give out free copies of it to people who come into my office. I have a number of different things on my front table here, promoting the district, and, you know, maps and travel guides and those types of things, and helpful phone numbers for different state agencies. But then I also have a copy of this because, frankly, I think anyone who cares enough about our state government to come in and pay a visit, if they want the opportunity to read some of these documents, I want to make those available. And it includes things like the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, various Federalist Papers, you know, separated out the Bill of Rights so that they have an emphasis on that, and various letters from the founders back and forth. So, and I think all of those types of things are important to understanding who we are as a country, where we came from, and what really separates the United States of America from everything that came before.
Well, that's exactly right. And, of course, with that is the Bill of Rights. And, you know, it's funny what we're looking at today with the amendments to the Constitution. We see some candidates for office questioning the Second Amendment. And so that's been, you know, something that's been on the front burner. Ms. Clinton has... you know, in some references of speech, I'm not sure it's an actual official candidate position, but there certainly is a lot of consternation about some of the comments that she's made to roll back or limit the Second Amendment. And let me read that. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So it's very simple, it's very basic, and it's very fundamental to a free republic for the people, the right to bear arms. We see the tyrants over the years in other countries and other dictatorships, they sought for gun control, to basically disarm the public. So, you know, there are some real challenges to the Constitution. Certainly, we see the First Amendment under assault when it comes to the freedom of religion. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. So we see assaults to both the First and Second Amendments. Your thoughts?
Well, and those are two obviously very important amendments to bring up, and they're the two that probably have the most what I'd consider high-profile litigation surrounding them. And I think you're absolutely right. Look, the First Amendment, I think, is about as clear as it could possibly be. And it says the freedom of religion, you know, shall not be infringed. It doesn't say you can't talk about religion in the public square. It says Congress won't establish, right?
Correct.
It doesn't say that you can't have a historical display about the development of the law that happens to include, quite historically accurately, by the way, references to the Ten Commandments. So I think that the First Amendment has been contorted in a lot of different ways over the years. And you see this through the development of the law and development of case law in a number of different areas. But I think it's pretty straightforward. You know, the Second Amendment, the prefatory language about a well-regulated militia doesn't, in my view, add limitations on the operative language in any way. But I think the more important overarching principle here is that these were rights that that actually predated the Bill of Rights, that predated the Constitution. And what the Bill of Rights itself is a recognition of the fact that those rights are inherent in all persons, that you have a right to self-defense, whether the government grants it to you or not. And we have the Second Amendment to remind government that it can't take away that right. You have a right to free speech. You have a right to freedom of religion, whether or not the government grants those to you. And the First Amendment is there to serve as a limitation on government to make sure that it doesn't overreach its bounds and that it doesn't intrude into those things that you already have.
We're talking to State Senator Larry Obaugh. We're talking in observance of the celebration of Constitution Day, which is this week. We're celebrating it on, in the schools on Friday, but it's actually on Saturday. September 17th is Constitution Day. And I'm thinking about the story that's told of Benjamin Franklin emerging from what we know as Independence Hall, but and a woman coming up to him and saying, after they convened about the meetings of the Constitution, and the woman said to the good doctor, "Doctor, what form of government do we have?" He said, "You have a republic, madam, if you could keep it." And that's where we've been these many years, 229 years, United States under the U.S. Constitution. But we've seen so many challenges as of late to the Constitution itself, the federal government. We see an executive branch that has sought to en route the political process of the balance of powers. You have the legislative, the judicial, and the executive. We see the trampling of the 10th Amendment. 10th Amendment is, of course, states' rights. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectfully or to the people. Your thoughts, Senator, on the 10th Amendment?
Sure. Well, we actually just passed a resolution in the legislature this past spring that was sponsored by myself and Keith Faber, reaffirming the principles of the 10th Amendment and trying to remind Congress and the administration in Washington that in fact, all government authority wasn't given to the federal government, that the states aren't, you know, subjects of the federal government. The states, frankly, work for the people. And And the genius of the founders, really, that you see in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution is an emphasis on liberty. And that's why the United States is different than so many different nations that came before that. What we did in setting up our government was divide power. And you see that in the structure of the Constitution, which divides power through federalism, the federal government, then the state level, and then within states, the state level versus the local level, but also through the separation of powers, dividing government into three different branches, the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary. And James Madison referred to this as the double security that arises to the rights of the people. And again, you see the emphasis on liberty in the Bill of Rights. The first 10 amendments protect important rights like freedom of speech, freedom of religion, the right to self-defense, due process rights for criminal defendants. And then the founders, cap off the Bill of Rights by making it very clear in the 9th and 10th Amendments that additional powers and rights not enumerated in the Constitution are nonetheless retained by the people. And that's not something that that most political leaders in the 1770s, 1780s, or even today would come up with, an intentional limitation on government power. And if you're looking at the people who are writing this, really an intentional limitation on themselves, because they know the failings of human nature. They understand that too much power in any one entity is generally not good for everyone else. And so the Constitution emphasizes liberty by dividing it so many different ways so that no one branch, no one level of government ever has enough power to usurp the rights of the people. And I think that we've, in many ways, seen some transformation of that over the years.
Well, and again, we've seen limitations even put on the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment reads, "The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized." Well, this is a whole new arena when we consider the technological age and the internet and identity of individuals out there on the World Wide Web. And of course, there was Mr. Snowden, who said that the NSA was going beyond the rights of government to actually be snooping and categorizing information on individuals without their knowledge. Your thoughts on that one?
Well, I don't want to get too much into the facts of Snowden's case, one way or the other, or the allegations that he made. But I do think
he did bring to light this, whether we people either see him as treasonous or a patriot. But the fact of it is, he did shine a light on a situation that most Americans were not aware of.
Well, and I do think that the changes in technology have created situations that aren't, that weren't necessarily foreseen, obviously, by the founding fathers. I think what we have in the Bill of Rights dealing with this is the bedrock principle, and that's some of the issues that we face, both with national security, but also just with normal law enforcement today is, what constitutes an unreasonable search and seizure? Is this something that that the framers would have prohibited? Is it not? Those are challenging questions, because we have a whole host of scenarios now that probably couldn't have been envisioned back then. And I think that the primary focus now needs to be, okay, we've agreed on the bedrock principle. Even if there's a new scenario that couldn't have been envisioned, how does the principle apply properly here? So it does create a lot of unique challenges.
It does, and of course, when we consider you know, the right of people to be secure in their persons and for against unlawful searches and seizures in the day in which we live. And there was that balance between security and then privacy. And the Patriot Act, as it was called, I don't think that was the best name for it. But of course, sometimes we name these things because, oh, it's the Patriot Act. And it was after 9/11. But, you know, that's where you don't want to surrender your privacies. And I think there's been some good constitutional discussion in Congress, in both the U.S. House and in the Senate, by a number of people over the last number of years on this this issue. Now, we have seen by the executive branch an overreach of power by the executive branch. Now, the people then voted the party of opposition to come and to put restraints on the executive branch. But people have been frustrated with that, Senator, you know, in Washington, because they felt that more should have been done to constrain Mr. Obama on these many. In fact, I think he's a record-breaking executive order president. Am I right about that?
I don't know the numbers, but he uses a lot of orders, certainly. And I think that's something that President Bush was criticized for as well. But when the current administration got control of things, I guess suddenly became okay. So that raises some interesting questions too. It's not okay for Republican presidents to do it, but maybe it is for Democrats. I find that sort of curious. I think with this presidency in particular, you see a significant number of overreaches, and largely what you're referring to here are administrative agency actions where Congress hasn't acted, or in some cases where Congress has acted, but the administration decides, hey, we're going to do something different. And I think there's been an awful lot of that type of activity, and I don't think that's appropriate. I think that the Congress was set up to be, you know, the people who write the laws, the executive branch is supposed to enforce them and do some specific things that are spelled out in the Constitution, like provide for national security. But I don't.
Or immigration. The president went ahead and authorized illegal immigrants to be processed. And in violation, there are those who challenged him in court. And the court just this is that balance of power, cited against the president and saying it was an unconstitutional act. So his immigration policy was an unconstitutional act. So this is the balance of powers that we talk about.
And this administration also, this president also made recess appointments when the Senate wasn't in recess. So this is a pattern that you see going back several years. It's not something new. It's not specific to one particular issue. I think we have a real problem in Washington where we have a system that was set up to divide power, to give certain responsibilities to the legislature, other responsibilities to the executive. And what we have right now instead is one branch trying to basically perform both sets of functions. And I think that fundamentally is one of the reasons that I worked to pass the Founding Documents Bill a number of years ago. Part of it also, to be candid, was just getting back to basics and saying, okay, people need to know these things. Here are the principles that our country was founded on. I think Newsweek or some other newspaper at the time or magazine had done a study where they interviewed, you know, a bunch of different people and asked questions about how many branches of government are there. Can you name one power of the federal government? Those types of things. And the results, as you'll recall from our conversations at the time, were pretty stunning. And really, we wanted people to get back to basics and learn history and learn the fundamentals in a way that I think they had unfortunately gotten away from in recent years. But the other important benefit, as I just said, is that we wanted people to understand who we are as a country. What are the principles that we believe in? Why do we have the separation of powers? Why is it important that the legislative branch have these authorities and that the executive have a different set of authorities? Why don't we just let the executive do everything? if you want to participate in our republic, in our representative democracy, it's obviously much better that people understand these things, that they understand what the structure of government is, why it's that way, what the principles are that we're trying to protect, and most fundamentally, that protecting that structure, protecting those principles, ultimately protects the liberty of the individual citizen. And that's really the reason, the other reason why I did that bill and why then Senator Grendel and I collaborated on it, because these things are, they go to the core of who we are as a nation, and they go to the core of each individual person's responsibility as a citizen in our society.
We're talking with State Senator Larry Oboff. We're talking about Constitution Day. And if you missed any of this broadcast, you can hear it on our website at ohioca.org. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back on the other side to talk about the progress in the Ohio classroom of the teaching of the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
And we're back, and we're talking about Constitution Day, which is being celebrated in the classroom this Friday, but Constitution Day is September 17th. And with us on the phone is State Senator Larry Oboff, who was one of the original sponsors of the Founding of American Documents Curriculum Bill, which passed the Ohio legislature after a 10-year effort with our organization. And then finally, State Senator Larry Oboff and State Representative John Adams were able to get it through, and then Governor Kasich signed it in a law. The state school board at the time has given its stamp of approval and tried to help also with its implementation, the classroom in all of Ohio's 88 school districts. And we've gotten varying reports from around the state of how it's progressing. It does have an end of course requirement exam, and we want to thank the senator for that. That's a provision that he put into the bill, really making it more substantive for the Ohio student. Senator, have we gotten reports? How are we doing in the Ohio classroom in regard to learning the Constitution and the American form of government, our republic?
Well, I'll be following up over this coming school year to see how things are going as far as the implementation goes, and that's something that former Representative Adams and I do every now and then just to check in. We've actually been to some school board meetings together over the last few years to make sure that we're making the progress. But what this bill does, it gets back to the basics, as I said before. We have the Ohio Constitution, the Northwest Ordinance, and the Declaration of Independence, and the U.S. Constitution with a particular emphasis on the Bill of Rights. And what we did was required in the bill that when you're covering that time in history anyway, so it's not, some kind of big unfunded mandate or anything like that, students are going to learn about the founding era. And in their Ohio history classes, they are going to learn about the Ohio Constitution and the Northwest Ordinance in that era. We said, go back and read the original documents. Go back and actually take a look at these, because, frankly, they're some of the most important documents. They certainly lay the foundation for our government in the state and in the country. But they also reflect what I consider to be watershed moments in political thought. They shape who we are as a people. And they really do emphasize, I think, or will help students understand really what's great about America and what's great about Ohio. The Declaration of Independence, Peter Schramm, from the former director of the Ashbrook Center, came to testify in favor of that and testified very poignantly that what we were saying in the Declaration of Independence wasn't intended to set out anything new, but really show the collective thought of the people and emphasize again equality and liberty, two principles that historically, you know, probably haven't been treated that well by a lot of different people who are running, you know, large governments. And the emphasis on the two of those principles really is a pretty amazing thing in political history. And you go to the Constitution, which we discussed previously and which we'll all be celebrating this Saturday, and frankly, which we all should be celebrating every day of the week, every week of the year, emphasized again, dividing power, protecting the rights of the people, and really focusing in a way that most governments hadn't before on the individual, on each person's inherent worth, and that I think is just a something that you want students to understand, right?
It's
one thing to read this in a textbook third hand. It's a different thing to say, here's the historical context. Here's the types of governments we had then, a lot of kings and queens and those types of things. And here's a document from the founders that says, no, everybody's equal. All men are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. And by the way, here's our Constitution following that up that says the people are the center here, not the government. And
each man,
government power.
That's right. Each man and woman is a sovereign in this United States Republic. Senator, thanks for joining us. We'll have to have you back. God bless you, my friend. Happy Constitution Day to you, sir.
Happy Constitution Day to you and all your listeners, too.
Thank you. Well, so good to have State Senator Larry Oboff on with us today, of course, and Constitution Day. If you missed any of this program, you can go to our website at ohioca.org. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. God bless.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.